Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have special guests. They are part of the famous group, the Silvers. Give it up for Angela Silver and Patricia Silvers.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello, good morning. Well, it's morning over here.
Good morning.
Hello,
welcome.
This is...
Yes, welcome to... If Factor Entertainment Radio.
How are you?
I'm good.
Good, good. Now, Pat is not with me yet. She was going to come in from where she lives, which is about 2 hours away, and she hasn't quite made it yet, so I'm just hoping she'll get here before we're done.
Yes. How was it like growing up in the Silver's family?
It was like growing up in any house where you have more than three kids in a house. There were 10 of us, so it was hectic. It wasn't anything different because we sang. It was still, I think, when we were growing up, our mothers were all Catholic, so it's like everybody had at least 8 or 10 kids. So, you know, it was the same in every household. You had a bunch of kids and a bunch of craziness going on, but, you know, that's what it was back then.
Awesome. Yes. Did y'all consider Leon Silver was like a second dad to y'all?
I can't answer for anybody else, but for me, he was. He wasn't even a second dad. He was just my father figure because my father wasn't around when we were growing up. So he was... my father figure. I know he was for Pat as well. I remember when he got married and moved out of the house, I used to get in trouble so that my mom would send me over there to stay with him. But he was very much a father figure for me, well, you know, in my younger years.
And was it you and Pat and Foster decision to join the music business, or y'all had other aspirations as small kids?
Well, it wasn't something that was sat down and discussed, okay? It just, Leon wrote music. He would ask us, come in here and sing this song. I got to have this new song, you know? And so he would just give us a song and we'd sing it. There was never any discussion, okay, do you guys want to join the group or do you not? Because there was no... there just was never any discussion about it. Oland left, so I filled in. And then when Charmaine left, then Pat filled in. Then when they came back, it was all of us then. But there was never any discussion about it or anything. As far as aspirations to do something else, I can't answer for anybody else, but I wanted to be an architect and or an actress. But I remember when I was late teens, I dated someone who was in show business, and he was doing a movie, so I went on the movie set, and I saw what it entailed, and so that changed my mind on acting. I didn't want to do that anymore because it was a whole lot of technical stuff, and it just didn't appeal to me anymore. And then architecture, I was a lazy kid in school, so when I realized I had to take a whole lot of math, I changed my mind on that. So singing was all I had at that time.
And I noticed on the first album, Foster Silvers, that Mr. Meter was definitely one of the top hits, and to this day, it's risen for all the new generation and even music artists like the DOC with It's Funky Tonight. Yeah.
Yep.
And what's your memories of Don Cornelius on Soul Train for the first time performing Mr. Meter?
Again, we were so young, and I was neither. We weren't the kind of kids that were like starstruck by anybody. We just kind of, we were just like kids. Okay, as I remember when we did the show, it was a lot of sitting around and waiting. And so you're talking about 12, 11, and 10. Okay, so we were not, that was more of a pain than anything. It was like, oh, my God, when is this going to be over? You know, because you're sitting around for hours before you actually tape. And we had some of our friends with us. And, you know, we were just in the dressing room just acting silly. I mean, it was cool to meet him, but that was like, oh, there's Don Cornelius. Okay. So when are we going to be done and get the heck up out of here? And so we were, you know, we were just, we were kids, you know.
Right. Yeah, I still remember even with your sister, Pat, asked him a question, and I really liked the line when she said, continue.
Oh, wait, you mean on the show?
Yeah.
Okay, I can't remember that.
Right. Also, what was it like to meet the Jacksons for the first time, the Jackson family?
Well, that was cool. We didn't get to spend a whole lot of time with them, but, you know, they... Right On Magazine did a shoot where they took pictures of the guys playing basketball against each other and us just hanging out with them. They tried to make it look like it was a casual hanging out thing, but it really wasn't. It was more of a stage thing. And, you know, when their father, when we were done with the shoot, he was done with us. It was time to go. We couldn't hang out, you know. So, but it was cool meeting them. Now, Charmaine and LaToya, they stayed in touch, and then Leon stayed in touch with Jackie and Jermaine for a minute, you know. But other than that, that was it. And the time that we opened for them, I don't even remember what city that was. I wish I could remember. But that was short-lived as well.
Right. Basically, y'all started in the same time frame, basically, with the Jackson family and the Osmond family also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was another family too. I don't know if you remember them, but they were the DeFranco family. It was like the, I guess that was the time frame for the family groups, you know.
Right. Did you finally got to see any of your older siblings appearing on Bet Your Life episodes and make Room for Daddy TV show?
Well, yeah, we have somebody put the one with my mom and dad. They put that one on Facebook, so we have that one. So that was really cool to watch because my mother was pregnant with me at that time. I wasn't born yet. And Ricky was the baby that she was holding. So that was cool to watch that because, again, I didn't grow up with my father, so it was cool to see my mom and dad together, you know, because we just didn't grow up with our father. And also, too, and I know this is probably going to sound really odd, but, you know, I knew my parents were smart, but I just never realized how smart, you know, because they just never, like, okay, my dad wasn't around, and my mother was very, she was very humble. She was just a a home mom. You know, back then it wasn't popular for women to go to work. So she was always home with us, and, you know, she didn't try to show off how smart she was or anything like that, you know. So we just grew up with mommy, you know, and she was just mommy. And watching that show, and I realized, yeah, she could have done so much more had she not sacrificed and had 10 kids, you know.
Right.
So I would suggest to a lot of people, if you don't really, because I mean, just because our parents are our parents doesn't mean we really know them. And if you have a parent that isn't one to really boast about themselves, it's really hard to know who they really are. And I, after watching that, I got a better appreciation of them both. So I would just like challenge people to just step out and get to know your mom and dad a little bit better. Just ask them about themselves when they were younger and what their aspirations were. You know, you'd probably be surprised.
Right. Also, what was it like performing on the Osmonds show?
It was all the TV shows were pretty much the same. You sit around for hours waiting to film. Every host done every show that we've ever done, they've always been very friendly. The two that were the most friendly were Dick Clark and Merv Griffin. They were the most friendly. They would come into our dressing room and talk with us, you know. And the rest of them, they were always kind to us, and they always had us back, you know. But Merv Griffin and Dick Clark were, they just like, they were real personal, you know. They'd come in and sit down and talk to us while we were sitting around and waiting and stuff, you know. But again, I was young, and I hated all the sitting around and waiting. That was just, that really turned me off from doing television, you know. It's like, oh, my gosh,
right.
This is what it is. I don't want it, you know.
Yeah, I noticed that you was kind of shy in one of the interviews with Dick Clark. I guess that's when you was joining your older brothers and sisters at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And Leon had his, I think, two-year-old daughter, out in the,
oh,
in
Shannon,
the audience.
Yeah. Yeah, she didn't want to come up. That was funny. we would have the kids in the audience a lot of times, you know, because Olan had my nephew Michael and my niece Diava, and Leon had his daughter. So they would, you know, every once in a while we'd bring them. Now, my niece Diava, talk about a ham and a half, good Lord. We were filming one TV show, I don't remember which one it was, and she was like a little over a year old, and my mother was holding her, and they were filming us doing Hotline. And so the cameras were filming and moving all around, and they were filming everything, and she started fidgeting with my mom to put her down, and my mom put her down, and she ran up. She didn't get in the way of the cameras because she could tell that, you know, she didn't want to get in the way, but she was doing all of our choreography. She knew all of our steps. And the cameramen stopped filming and spun around and were filming her. It was hilarious because here's this little tiny, and she didn't have a whole lot of hair when she was little. So this is this bald-head little baby with a dress on, you know. She was doing all the Hotline choreography. I thought that was so cute. I've been trying for years to remember what show that was so we could get a copy of it. So I think that was hilarious.
Right. And a lot of people have been asking for Edmund. They definitely miss him. Definitely wish he was still here.
Yeah.
He has so much like charisma as a singer also.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that he did. He has
right.
He has several children, and their personalities on several of them are just as big as his was. Yeah, so
right.
I just think it's cute because when I watch them and listen to them, it's like they have his big, giant personality because Edmund did have a big personality.
Was it true they was trying to get a they did a brief reality show?
Who? Edmund's Children?
Yes.
They had a pilot, and I don't know what happened with it. Like, it never got aired. They put it on, I saw it online, but I don't know, you know, what happened with it.
Right. And I noticed that they are talented also, I thought his daughter was actually a younger version of him and Patricia.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Yeah, I really thought that was actually Patricia, his daughter. He looked more like him and Patricia.
Which one? He has a bunch of daughters.
I would say the oldest one.
I don't think you've seen the oldest one. He has two that are in Virginia. And then there's one here in L.A. So I'm not real sure which one you're referring to. Now, the one in Virginia, the older one in Virginia, she looks a lot like Olan and Shannon, Leon's daughter. And then Zyria, she has a lot of Pat's features.
Was it true that you had a relationship with Dwayne Haywood from What's Happening?
No. I met him once, and that was it. We never had a relationship.
I noticed that you was also performing mostly in the 80s when Charmaine was leaving mostly, along with you and your sister was doing mostly the vocals with Foster.
No, I joined the group in the 70s.
No, I'm talking about in the later 80s when it was like when both of your sisters left, Olympia and Charmaine, and it was basically five of y'all when
Olan left
solo.
In the 70s. No, Olan left in the 70s. Charmaine left in the 70s because she got married and she got pregnant. Charmaine came back in the 80s. But our last album was like around 83 or 84, somewhere around there. But Pat and I started singing with the bigger Silvers in the 70s because we were all on the Hotline Boogie Fever album.
Right. And I noticed that y'all had amazing hairstyles. Y'all had a hairstylist, or y'all did it on your own?
So what are you referring to, like our album covers or just in general?
Album covers and also...
No, the album covers, they're always, except for that first album cover that we did where it's all nine of us, every other album cover after that, they had someone come in and do our hair.
Okay.
Especially the album we did... in the 80s where I had a big giant mohawk and Pat had the mohawk hair. That thing was hilarious. They put so much hairspray in our hair that you could hit it and it wouldn't move. It took me forever to wash that stuff out of my hair.
And definitely I noticed that was a good song for y'all also, Falling for Your Love also. Also, Is it possible? Could we see another Silver's reunion show?
We're working on some things, and there's things that need to get ironed out. And once they get ironed out, then you'll see something from us. That's really like all I could say, because I can't really speak on behalf of other people, and everything that we do is connected to somebody else. So, you know, I have to just keep it vague in general.
Awesome. And I noticed that y'all did something in, was it 2010, a gospel, y'all did a gospel song, you, Foster, and Patricia?
Oh, in 2009 when we did the Taste of Soul?
Yes.
Yes, that was a song that Foster wrote.
He was very talented. It seemed more like a gospel, hip hop, R&B song.
Mhm. Yeah, we have on this album that Leon is finishing up the music on. There's quite a few. Like, I don't like to call it gospel or R&B or this or that, because what it does is it puts a label on something, and you can. When you start labeling things, you could actually move some people away from the music. That's why I always tell people, just when it comes out, just listen to it. If you like it, then you like it. Because gospel music, the word gospel literally means good news about Jesus Christ. So a lot of the songs that Foster wrote are how we used our faith to help us through the hard times that we've gone through in life. So that's not necessarily gospel, because gospel means the good news of Jesus Christ. And so the songs aren't all just about Jesus Christ, even though one of them is. And that one I really love, too.
Yes, that was definitely a good song.
Yeah, well, see, music, I believe, and I believe I can speak for my family with this, music should heal people. Okay, when you hear music, even if you hear a certain tone of music, a certain notes that are played, they can invoke some kind of emotion, you know? And so I really believe that music should be designed to help people, during rough times. I remember a few years ago, actually it's probably 6 years ago now, Pat and Foster and I did another interview on an internet radio station, and they played one of the songs that we did, and the words were, "When you feel like giving up, you need someone to keep you going." They played that song, and then they took some calls. And afterwards, one of the ladies called in, and she said she was contemplating of going and getting high. She was a recovered addict. And she said she heard the song, and she decided not to. That's what I believe music is supposed to do. You know, somebody told us when Edmund passed away, I went online and was just chatting with a few people, and a guy sent in an email, and he said that during the time when we were singing, he was thinking about committing suicide. And when one of our songs came out, they debuted it, and it was Take a Hand. And he heard that song, and he decided not to. You see what I'm saying? So I believe that that's what music should do. Music should lift people up. It should, give them encouragement. It should give them hope. It should do something to invoke a positive reaction.
Right, from that, turning negatives into positives.
Or just, everybody's going to go through things. I don't care if you're a Christian. I don't care if you're a non-Christian. You're still going to go through things. But I'll tell you this, I'd rather go through my life with God than without Him, because my life got real ugly there for a minute. And if it were not for God, I'd probably would not be here right now.
That's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Was it tough for you and your siblings to go to school while y'all famous?
I was only in public school for a short while after we started singing. Because after that, we couldn't go to school. We had to have tutors on the road, because you can't you can't be in a public school and miss that many days. So by the time I got in high school, they put me in the continuation class, which was actually for the bad kids. But they didn't have any other kind of system, and I couldn't be enrolled in regular school and miss as many days as we were missing because we were always on the road. So we had to take a tutor, and we had to do 4 hours of school a day, and that's how we did school. So we didn't have a regular, you know, it just wasn't regular. And even when I was in a regular middle school, I didn't like it because there were girls that didn't like me, but when they found out who I was and who my brothers were, they wanted to be my friend, and I didn't do very well with that kind of stuff. So I didn't miss school.
Right, to stay. I know that you was more of foster protector. If anyone was picking, was bullying him or anything else.
Well, he didn't get bullied a lot. It's just he was my little brother. Pat was my little sister, and our whole family was like that. If you were with your family, whoever was younger, the older ones would step in. You know, Charmaine and Olan used to embarrass Leon and them because if they were getting into it with somebody, they would come running out there to fight, you know, and so you don't have your sisters fight for you, you know. So they weren't happy with it, you know. And so it was just a natural, and I think that's with any family. When you have siblings, especially multiple siblings, the younger one is always going to be protected by whoever was older. And our family, we had so many kids that our family was sort of like sectioned off. Okay, you had Leon and Jonathan who hung around when they were younger, and Charmaine and Olan when they were younger, Ricky and Edmund, and then it was me, Pat, and Foster. And so, you know, it was just the natural order of things. In our little section, I was the oldest, so.
Right.
And I was a bossy person anyway, so.
And I was definitely shocked to hear about Christopher Silver, also the baby sibling.
Yeah, he was 17 when he passed away. That was rough. That was rough.
Right.
I have a baby. Oh, he's not a baby anymore. He's 16. But my youngest son, I named after Chris. And the funny thing is he actually favors him a lot.
Oh. Do you have any memories of appearing in the movie The Fish That Saved Pittsburgh?
Yeah, that was fun. Because it seemed like filming that went faster than when we did TV shows where we were singing. Because they had everything ready. We went into makeup. We put on our costumes. I think the weirdest part was the dresses that we had on, they were, you know, see-through at the bottom. And when we put them on, you could just see right through it. And so we were like, okay, there's no pants or nothing that goes with this. So they had to go run out and buy, like, kick panties that cheerleaders wear to put under the dress because you could just see right through it, you know. So that was the only thing that was kind of funny. It was cool meeting the ball players. It was cool meeting Debbie Allen. And like I said, that one went the smoothest, it seemed like. And we weren't there. Well, we were still there for a long time, but it just seemed to go smoother than just regular TV shows. So that was kind of cool.
What was your reaction when you first heard that the DOC is Funky Enough song?
I'm sorry?
What was your reaction when the rapper, the DOC, used It's Funky Enough, using the lyrics from Mr. Meter?
You know what? I didn't even hear half of the songs that used Mr. Meter. I didn't even, you know, like my brothers would tell me, oh, yeah, such and such is remixing in Mr. Meter or this or that. I don't listen to the radio. I listen to jazz music. So if it's not a jazz station, and then I either listen to Siri, you know, the radio stations that don't have a whole lot of commercials, or on my television, the, you know, DirecTV jazz station. So for the last 20 years, I haven't really even listened to a whole lot of music other than jazz.
Right. What will you give, what kind of advice will you give to young artists that's trying to make it into the music business?
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, what was the question again?
What kind of advice will you give young artists out here trying to pursue the music business?
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. The main thing that I would say to people trying to get in the business is make sure you're grounded in something other than wanting to be famous or rich. Because if that is your goal, if that's the person's goal for getting into the industry, they're going to be in for a rude awakening. Okay, it's really easy to get used in this business. A lot of people who are running the business don't have the same aspirations as the artist. So if your goal is just to make money and be famous, if there's a leech around, meaning a person who's just going to try to suck you dry, that's what they'll do. They'll use you. And it's just so, so important that people read stuff before they sign it. Don't ever let somebody tell you this is what it says. Read it. If you don't understand it, go get your own independent lawyer to read it for you. You know, and you have to decide how much are you willing to give up? Because when you're new in the industry, somebody's going to always say, well, you need me more than I need you. So they're always going to try to convince you to give up something. Okay. So a young person, you have to know what it is that you really want and how much you're willing to give up. If you're not willing to give up a whole lot, then you fight. And don't give up on your dream just because a few people say no. The industry, you're going to hear a lot more no's than you hear yeses. You know, you just have to, a person just has to be diligent and consistent in what they want to do. But, oh my gosh, I can't stress this enough. Read. Read your contracts. Don't just sign them. And don't let the person who's trying to convince you to sign it bring you a lawyer. Go get your own lawyer. You know, I don't care if you have to borrow the money from somebody to pay the lawyer to read it for you, but get somebody independent to read it for you, to break it down for you so you do understand what you're getting into. You know, most people don't even read the contracts when they get a cell phone. You know, and we find out later that we hooked ourselves into all this little ridiculous stuff. And in the industry, good Lord, please don't do that. That would be the worst mistake
right.
that you could ever make.
And there is still a thousands of performers out here that are still trying to fight for rights to their
music,
to their past songs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they didn't know, and you know, a lot of artists, they tend to not want to even be interested or involved in the business end of it, because business, it does kind of stunt your creativity when you're trying to be creative, because business gets into a whole nother area. But unfortunately, you have to have some knowledge of how it's run. Otherwise, you can be had. You can be taken.
Right. And I noticed that these, you know, like Corporate America, you know, some of these deals, they want to control what you do, and you got to look this certain part, and it's like some artists have less creative control over their over themselves in the industry.
Well, definitely. I mean, that's the main thing. It's like if a company could get control over the artist, then they can dictate everything, and if they control all the money, then they control the artist. You know. And so that's why I said if a person is really, truly interested, then you need to know what it is that you really want to do, which direction you really want to go in. And unfortunately, you're probably going to have the door closed in your face a few times in order to get what it is that you really want. you know, or you might have to give up a little bit of something, you know, a little bit of compromise, but you have to know what it is that you really want. And if you're really an artist and you really just want to entertain, don't run after fame and money. Because if you're running after fame and money, that's what the leeches will use to reel you in. You know, they promise, 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 and then at the end of the day, the only ones getting rich, you know, are the people running everything.
True.
And the thing that's sad is this isn't something that has only happened a few times. It's been happening since the beginning, and it keeps happening over and over and over. It's like if you talk to almost every artist who has had some kind of fame, and then it came down, it's the same story, you know. Somebody got a hold of all of our money and took it, you know.
True. And I've seen some a lot of stories on these artists out here. Even the Osbournes and the when that show was ending, they didn't look over several of their contracts, and they lost tons of money and had to they had to end up regaining their losses.
Yeah, it just, you know, it happens to lots of artists, not just, and it isn't that people are dumb or stupid. It's just, like I said, a lot of times when you're an artist, you just kind of let things go, especially someone when you're creative. You kind of let things go over because it just kind of stunts the creativity. So you're trying to stay in a creative mode. And if somebody is a real, real good leech, they know how to approach at a certain time. I mean, it's a lot of people don't think this, but a lot of this stuff is calculated, okay? Catch somebody when they're down. Catch them when they're desperate, then you can get them to do whatever you want them to do.
That's true.
Yeah, and desperation is a spirit. You don't have to be desperate. Just because your situation looks bleak doesn't mean that I have to be desperate.
That's true. Also, most of y'all grew up in Gary, Indiana, or California?
No, we grew up in California. Well, I was born in California, but the older ones were born in Indiana, and I think... I don't want to get this wrong, but three of them were born in Indiana, and one of them was born somewhere else. And then they grew up in Tennessee, in L.A., because that's where the rest of us were born.
Right. And I noticed your parents are from the South, Louisiana and Tennessee?
Yeah, my dad's from Tennessee, and my mom's from Louisiana.
Right. And I noticed that Los Angeles was the roughest part of the neighborhood y'all lived in?
We lived in Watts at that time. We moved in Watts, like, right after the riots in the 60s. And, you know, we had the riots in Watts in, I think it was 1960 or 61, somewhere around there. Well, we moved into Watts in 66. And we lived there till about 72.
Do you have any memories of working with Janet Jackson as background singers?
I didn't do any background vocals for her.
Okay. Oh, it wasn't none of the Silvers?
I don't know if Charmaine or Pat, because see, there was a while there where I just kind of just moved away from singing. I didn't want to have anything to do with it. I was married. I was having my kids. I didn't want to have anything to do with it. And Charmaine and Pat and the rest of the Foster and Edmund and them, they were all doing their own thing. So I don't really know what artists they may or may not have worked with.
And I noticed that, what was it like doing the TV One interview?
TV One? You mean Unsung?
Yeah, on the Silvers, yes.
What about it?
I noticed that was actually a good episode of Unsung right there on TV One with all your siblings being interviewed about your life and story.
Uh-huh.
And
was there a question?
Yes. Were you did TV One y'all was willing to do it at first when they came across?
When what? I'm sorry, I'm not understanding the question.
When TV One was interested in interviewing.
Actually, they weren't originally interested in doing the Silvers. They wanted to do Leon because they had interviewed several other acts, you know, the Whispers, Shalimar, and some other acts, and Leon's name kept coming up. So they wanted to do an interview with Leon. And so Leon said, well, why don't you do it on the Silvers? So at that point, when they started looking in and they started realizing that people were asking to do a show on the Silvers, so then they decided, okay, we'll do it on the Silvers.
Right. That was a very, very good episode also.
Yeah, that was good. One of the things that I liked is they said that that year that they aired ours, that one was the most aired episode for that year.
Yep, still to this day, so, it's still re-airing.
I know, yeah, it came on not too long ago. I have a granddaughter now who is like 1 year old, and my son was watching it, and she was looking at the television, and she pointed, she said, Nani? And so she was trying to talk to me through the television. And he said when it went off, she started screaming, and she was hitting the television. So that was kind of cute. I like watching my grandchildren go through the different stages of seeing me on television and then looking at me. Because, you know, when they're that little, they don't know that that's television. They don't know that that's separate from what they see every day, you know. So that was kind of cute.
And there was so much comparisons of the Jacksons on there from the Silvers.
It really, I don't really think that if you really look at our groups, if you even put us together and listen to the music, it was really totally different types of music that we did. We had two girls. They didn't have any girls. The only thing that was similar was, you know, young boys, when they're young and they have high voices, they all sound the same. You know, Donny Osmond sound like that, you know, because they were young and they have the high voice, you know, so. But other than that, if you really think about it, there really was no comparison. I just think that because they were a black family and they sang, we sang, that it was just like a natural thing for the media to say, oh, this is that person's competition, when it really wasn't. Silvers fans have always been Silvers fans, and Jackson fans have always been Jackson fans. So it was never a... they took our fans, we took their fans. It was never that kind of thing. That was just something that the media liked to push, which is,
true.
You know, same thing they do nowadays, you know.
And I noticed that the music was also different also with Leon Silvers was more like soul. His music was more soul.
Yeah, he, you know, he had, Well, Leon was, his lyrics, I believe, were way ahead of his time, because Leon was 16 when he started writing, like, Fool's Paradise and Wish That I Could Talk to You and all those. I mean, think about it, a 16-year-old. Listen to the, if you get a chance to, again, listen to the lyrics of Fool's Paradise.
Yeah,
lyrics are deep.
Right.
You know? Then Leon was young, you know, writing stuff, you know, and so it just, it was, you know, the groups were actually apples and oranges. It was, you know, right on magazine, there weren't a whole lot of black family groups out at that time. So, you know, to sell magazines, it's easy to say, oh, they're competing, you know.
Right. And it was definitely a, Edmund getting a part of Marlon on the Jacksons cartoon.
On the cartoon, that was so that was ironic. You know, he with his paycheck, we got our first car.
And they actually the same age.
I don't know. I don't know Marlon's age.
Yeah, they definitely born the same year. Marlon and Edmund.
Mm-hmm. It could be. I mean, when you have that many kids, you're going to have some people born around the same time. Because there was eight of them and then 10 of us. So, and if you look at, again, if you look back at the era, that's the amount of children that our mothers were having at that time.
Right.
I mean, I have four kids, and people act like that's a lot.
I thought the average was five nowadays.
Nowadays? Depends on who you're talking to. Because the majority of the people that I know, two. And any more than two, they're like, oh, good Lord, no, we're not doing that, you know. There's a few people who are my age and older who have four that I know.
And y'all basically did your own choreography dancing, or y'all had others from the...
A lot of it we did ourselves, and then on some things they brought in choreographers. Like for Boogie Fever, they brought in a choreographer. And it was always a collaboration, even when they brought in a choreographer, because they would bring in choreographers who were more like Broadway style, and we're not Broadway, so we would have to tweak it to fit, you know, for us.
All right. Another good part of it also, choreographer dancing, was also the disco showdown song also.
That one, you know what, I can't remember if we did that one ourselves or if we had a choreographer then.
Right. And
I can't remember.
I think that was... I don't remember the show, but it had actually a guy in a Scooby-Doo costume and other people and other characters dancing to the beat while y'all was on performing on stage.
No, we never had Scooby-Doo on stage with us. I don't know what you saw.
Right. Definitely, fans can definitely check these out on streaming and also YouTube. Also,
no, we never had Scooby-Doo on stage with us. So if you saw something like that, somebody spliced something. But Scooby-Doo was never on stage with us.
Yeah. Yep. Could we also see possibly definitely a second generation of Silvers that's in the work?
Again, that would be Leon's project. My sons, I have two sons. Well, I have three sons, but my two older sons did some music with Leon's son, Leon's daughter, and two of Edmund's sons. So we'll just have to see what happens with that.
Right. Yes, yeah, I don't mean to cut you off, but we about to run out of time. I would like to schedule another one with you and Pat or any other of your foster siblings for another show.
Well, I have to talk to them first because I can't commit them to anything.
Okay.
Okay.
Pat, it was Angie, it was nice having you on here.
Well, thank you for asking.
You can come back anytime to the show.
Okay.
All right. You have a blessed
day. Thank you for having
me
on. You too.
All right. All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Angela Silvers. If you want to look for this archive, it's up at our Facebook page, Wrestling If Factor Radio / If Factor Entertainment Group, or at Wrestling If Factor Radio Show / If Factor Entertainment Radio, or at blogtalkradio.com.
Hello, this is Angie.
Yes, sorry to have you on. Yes, where were we again? Sorry about that. Forgot the hang up on Angela Silva. So you can catch it once again at blogtalkradio.com/WrestlingIt Factor Radio. And this is Wayne Benitez signing off. Later.
Stop traps, setbacks, all can come back.
Pick up on the track.
Take in stride.
Love and devotion.
Don't confide.
In the trash of lost emotion.
Let it ride.
It's going to flip the side.
Oh, she stole my heart.
But it's just a misdemeanor. You got to get over
it.
Oh,
he loved her from the start. What you gonna do?
When I think I'm in love and I catch my girl doing me wrong.
Too bad.
Because he has a setback in his life.
Like when you get your first ticket for illegal parking.
But don't you know?
It's no big deal.
Take it slow.
She's not for real.
Let it go.
Find a new appeal.
Oh,
she's so good. But it's just a misdemeanor. You got to get over.
Let it go.
Find a new appeal.
She's so mad.
Y'all ready for this?
But it just won't work, 'cause the beat is so rough. So tell me, tell it, don't be